Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit in survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
Good morning. Today I have Nicole Hammerquist with me, who is a DSP. And yeah, good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, John.
So, Nicole, what do DSPs do?
A DSP is a caregiver. It stands for Direct Service Provider. And it's there's many different titles for caregivers. Like when I am in the shoes of a direct service provider, I work for the brokerages, which means that I'm working for the intellectual disabilities community. When I'm working with more physically disabled people, I am a home care worker through the county, through Multnomah County, through the SEIU union. And so it's kind of very confusing, and it separates these communities in these arbitrary ways sometimes.
And when you say sets them in arbitrary ways, you mean it's kind of like setting the intellectually disabled community over here and the physically disabled community over here, rather than just saying they may have overlapping needs. Why not just combine them together?
Right. And if we're making these individualized care plans, then why couldn't that, those differences be represented in those care plans and in the services they receive?
Probably an attempt by the government to keep us at each other's throats rather than concentrating on the stupidity in the bureaucracy.
Yeah, I don't love bureaucracy or paperwork. It's not my strong suit.
Yeah. See, so I was wondering, how would your duties differ from, I mean, if you're taking physical care of somebody versus their intellectual care, is there a different set of trainings for the DSP than there is for the home care workers?
So DSP is run through a small business person. So I think it varies vastly based on who is employing the DSP. Home care worker is through the county and the state. And so it's like everything is the same kind of. And they are implementing some new trainings that we will start doing. But most of my training came from college because I have a bachelor's in social work. So I'm like overqualified, very overqualified for this.
Wow, a bachelor's in social work. So they must pay you quite a little bit of money.
There's no like education requirement for the position I hold.
Oh, so they don't pay you a whole lot of money?
I mean, the wage is a little bit more than minimum or than $15 an hour, because we do have the SEIU advocating for us and people like John advocating for us.
And when you say, so when you say SEIU, that's advocating for you on the home care and PSW side, but not necessarily on the DSP side, right?
Not necessarily, but I think that the more that politicians become aware of just disabled people's needs, the more services they'll get. So it probably helps both sides.
I was just kind of curious of that because I am aware that they had a bill in the House to increase the wages for DSPs to 150% of minimum wage, and yet it was defeated, which does seem to indicate that they really don't understand our needs, because if they did understand our needs, well, then they get in and they, like, you know, fund our DSPs or PSWs and our home care workers greater than minimum wage, which, you know, would help us hold on to the workers who are sometimes saving our lives, you know, and instead of constantly de-evaluate or, you know, valuing them and giving them a living wage.
So when we go to Salem to advocate, something I've noticed is like it'll be Dairy Farmer Day and the dairy farmers will be giving out free cheese and ice cream and yogurt to everybody. You know, when we go to advocate for disabled people, we don't have any goodies to give to anybody. We just have needs and it's not as flashy and exciting and there's not a big cash flow in it for the politicians. And so it's pretty discouraging, you know? And so it's great that SEIU exists to advocate for us as employees. But yeah, the little guy gets swept under the rug. It can be very discouraging.
And would you say that a lot, that some of this might be because we still live in a white male only world in the United States, and because caregiving is often a female predominantly, or, you know, there's mostly females in this profession. So they're definitely undervalued. And so that's probably why they don't give you all the wage you need and the benefits you need.
I would definitely say that caring is undervalued. You know, our last president didn't help with that at all. It's not cool to care. And especially during the pandemic, it's not easy to care.
Well, I mean, during the pandemic, you would think that's when they give you the most money because you are going to people's homes and kind of endangering the loved ones and everything else like that.
Yeah, I did get some assistance. And I heard that this last stimulus bill that passed had some special stuff set aside for caregivers. And I'm hoping that'll eventually get into my pocket. It hasn't yet. But I definitely, you know, and being a social worker or, you know, having that background, I know where to find the resources and was able to get some assistance that way as well. But yeah, it would be nice if I didn't have to be crafty and clever to get paid a reasonable amount. And even then, I don't really get paid a reasonable amount. But I was very happy to have an employment to be able to continue having a paycheck through the pandemic. It made me grateful to be in this field during this time.
Well, wouldn't you say that it'd be awfully nice if, you know, the state who essentially gives you the money would value you enough to give you a reasonable living wage with benefits that help keep you healthy and help out with your business expenditures?
Yeah, it would be nice to have a, well, yeah. I mean, the biggest thing for me right now is I want to be able to buy a house and, you know, I make plenty of money to be able to pay my portion of a mortgage if I shared it with others, and live a happy life. But I don't make enough to get a mortgage. Like the number that I bring home isn't enough. And so I'm going to have to leave caregiving to be able to make enough to go buy a house.
So it is, you would say, like, I mean, if you had to live on your own and you didn't have roommates, could you say you could live on what you make?
No, probably not.
So Nicole, you're a person who likes free stuff and you've got the skills to find the free stuff. But if you didn't have those skills, wouldn't you say this could be a business that could be difficult to make a living at?
Yeah, if I deserve to have nice stuff in life, I shouldn't have to just settle for whatever I can get. Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to give you proper value for all that education you went through.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, I'm a little curious about how you got into this business. Do you mind telling us your story?
Yeah, I had a mentor who had a master's in social work and was a director of nonprofits, kind of doing the nonprofit track of social work world. And then I, you know, had to go to community college, take prereqs, and then got into the school. And by the time I got to the end of my education track, this mentor was making 60K as a director of a YWCA and in her 60s and was working, you know, quote unquote, part time, but actually working way more than 40 hours a week. And I'd have ruled out that I probably didn't want to be a hospital social worker. I don't think I'm mental health counselor material. And so I kind of like am sitting there with this bachelor's degree looking at another, I think I would have gotten a deal on a master's degree, probably another $80,000 in debt to get a master's degree. And I'm like, well, I'm not actually, didn't feel very confident I was going to be able to make a return on finishing the track to become a master's in social work. So I continued working in restaurants. Then I got a job working in group homes and mental health. And then I was like, oh yeah, group homes are terrible. I'm never working in a group home again. And then I went back to restaurants, and then I got a job supported living apartments as a 24-hour like on-call crisis person, and also just teaching life skills. I've taught a lot of cooking classes. Then all of those programs got shut down, first in Multnomah County, and then I got moved to Clackamas County. It's like 2016. And then there was literally one supported living mental health apartment building in the Tri-County area. And so I was like, well, I can't work in that sector anymore. And then my good friend who is a elderly guy with cerebral palsy talked me into working for him. And then it's been about 3 years since I started caregiving, and I've learned a lot. And I don't know, it's nice to be more independent and work more directly with the client. And sometimes I wish I had the supervision I did when I was working, you know, with a team, more like with a team.
But working for the small provider orgs, don't you have like, I don't know, some way of communicating with like the boss of the provider org and getting some support from them when needed?
The owner which I work for as a DSP is available. But you know, it's like, it's rare that I see my coworkers because it's so like, nobody can work at the same time.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit isolating, but at the same time, I am sometimes in assisted living facilities and I see how weird their coworker dynamics are, and I don't miss that. As our friend Glenna likes to say, home care working is kind of like the wild, wild west of the caregiving world. You know, you're kind of out there on your own. Yeah. And your clients are often people understand stuff and, you know, I got to keep up.
So thanks for giving us that insight into, you know, what it's like to be a caregiver, you know, especially that inside of the wild, wild west. I think that's a good example to use to connect with. So Nicole, do you like your job?
I do, yeah. I could see myself doing this kind of work, you know, maybe switching up my clients here and there for a long time. But unfortunately, you know, the benefits are decent.
And when you say they're decent, are they decent on the home care worker side or are they decent on the DSP side?
The home care worker side, which is part of the reason I have to do both. I have to do a lot of juggling for my job to work. for me to get the best wage and the best benefits that I can. But even no matter how much juggling I do, I can't make enough to buy a house. So I'm going to have to, I'm like looking at maybe driving a bus. I don't know. I'm looking at something else that I can do long enough to get a mortgage. And then like, I imagine myself possibly coming back to home care or caregiving. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Once I change my path, I don't know if that's where, if it'll lead me back to it or not.
And I'd like to point out that, I mean, you know, I've always found you to be kind of crafty and skillful and kind of frugal with your money. Frugal, I hope I got that term correct. And, you know, kind of clever in how you find things and get things and stuff like that. Very resourceful. I keep on calling you the resource queen.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, somebody else who doesn't know how to work the system like you do probably doesn't have like the pay and the benefits you do. Wouldn't you say that'd be true?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, but I did the same track where I started working for a caregiving organization, which is another, you know, job that I've had that we didn't talk about. That's also part of the caregiving world, where you have, there's a larger organization coordinating the care. So it's better for the person receiving the care because they're guaranteed, like if I get sick, there's somebody to cover my shift.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of benefits to the client for that, but I'm pretty sure the employees make like $3 to $4 less per hour than I do.
Mm. And when you say, but that isn't, when you say 24-hour care, that really isn't what a DSP does, right?
Not 24-hour care, but they have coverage. With the caregiving organization, the care can go up to 24 hours. Yeah, some people do receive 24-hour care. But there's a lot of different ways to receive care.
Yes, from what I understand, and you can correct me if I've got any of this wrong, home care workers generally deal with people with disabilities, just physical disabilities. There are two people who deal with people who have intellectual disabilities, that's the DSPs and PSWs. Mm-hmm. And then there's within that whole system, which is really confusing, there's the one-on-one service that people would get with you as a DSP for a few hours. And then there's like, isn't there one that gives out like the 24-hour care? You live in your own home, but you get the 24-hour care and you don't have to worry about talking to any company and making sure that there's somebody coming in.
Yeah.
Remember that what that's called.
Yeah. You know, I think it's like caregiving organizations. Yeah.
And then there's like adult foster care. There's group homes. And then, of course, I like to think of this as different than anybody else. And that's what I call LARCH.
Well, there's also like assisted living.
Oh, yeah, assisted living. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But there's something that I noticed was, so I was working, I've been in and out of a facility, like one of my jobs is in a facility. I don't work for the organization, but like there was issues with wearing masks. And so I did some research, and I also like overheard one of the ombudsman's meetings, and it's like, you can't, there's like, reporting is so weird. Like some of these It's like not, I don't know. There's so many different nooks and crannies and different ways to do caregiving that it gets really confusing. Like, oh, who's watching out for these people? Are their concerns going to be heard by the, is it mandatory reporting? Like, are they actually protected under like are the concerns just going to get funneled into OSHA? Like, oh, it's just a safety, workplace safety concern. Like,
yeah, I know that all caregivers are required mandatory reporters, but
but with the pandemic, it's the masks, it was like, I guess it's not like obvious abuse, but I don't know. I just think it's I know somebody who lives in a assisted living home right now who has been in their room on lockdown in their room for 3 weeks and is going to be for 4 weeks because somebody tested positive for COVID 3 weeks ago. And it was probably because they're not requiring their employees to be vaccinated. Like, I don't think anyone in the US can require people to be vaccinated. It's wild.
Wow. Okay. That seems like prison to me. That seems bad to me. So Nicole, where do you see your future going?
I definitely see myself having to get a different job for at least 3 years, 2 to 3 years. And I don't know if that's going to be something that has a larger career path that I decide I want to follow, or if I just decide that I liked caregiving and I want to go back to caregiving. But I will have to change my line of work for a while and probably change up my clients, which it's really overwhelming to think about that, because I have 5 clients and I care about all of them and I don't want to like let them down or disrupt their lives. And so it's a really frustrating place to be in.
Well, that is often how it works in this industry, because, you know, it's for some unknown reason, both at the federal, state, county, and city level, people are unwilling to make caregiving a profession in which people can stay in their entire life, get a living wage, get the benefits they need, and the benefits that would attract future caregivers. And the clients are ultimately the ones who suffer for it. And we can't seem to get across to our politicians in any way, shape, or form. So, I mean, it really sucks that we have to lose good caregivers like you, because, you know, you want what everybody else wants in life and you can't get it by being in this profession that won't give you what you need to stay in it.
Yeah.
And that really sucks, not only for caregivers who really like being a caregiver, but also for clients who really need good caregivers. So, yeah, I mean, that's really bad to hear that you got to kind of move on from this. And people like me and hopefully the union, which is SEIU, Local 503, will continue to fight to end the ODD coalition will continue to fight for, all the home care workers, the PSWs, and the DSPs to make sure that they get what they need so that we can hold on to you all. And the self-advocates, of course, will continue to fight. And, you know, when you do step out of this field, hopefully you will step into a field that is now a profession in the future. Hopefully we get that real soon, though. I want to thank you for coming into the studio and, you know, sitting down and talking to me and tell me about DSPs and their struggles and tell me about some of your own personal struggles and stuff. Thanks for doing this interview, Nicole.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, John.
I hope to see you in the future. I hope to see you again here on my show.
Justice.
Yeah. disability justice, and everyday pursuit in survival. And holding on to our caregivers is a reason why it's an everyday pursuit in survival.
Yep.
I'm going to read to you from the DD Coalition's Go Bulletin from the 2021 Legislative Investments in DD Services. On Saturday, June 26th, we saw the legislature wrap up this long and fruitful legislative session. We are thrilled to see much needed investment in direct support professional wages during this legislative session. This additional funding will be a tremendous support for an area of our system that has been experiencing a staffing crisis for years. The legislature has done two things to create historic investment in direct support professional wages. Starting July 1st, 2021, DD provider rates will increase by 3.2%. Starting July 1st, 2022, the DD provider rate model will be fully funded. This means the average DSP wage included in rate structures will go from $14.16 per hour to $17.28 per hour. In doing this investment, the legislature created a budget note to explain its intent as follows. It is the legislature's intent to fully fund provider rates for adult and children's group home services, day support services, employment services, attendant care, supported living, and non-medical transportation. This has been a short report read by Dina Wilder, the board operator.
Dear KBOO listeners, I would first like to say thank you to KBOO for giving a voice to those of us who do not have a voice. Please support them as they support us.
You can donate by going to kboo.fm/give.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kboo.org.